Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corn. So I mentioned that I recently picked up a digital voice recorder, or a DVR. We had an extensive discussion about the law around recording in Israel, and I told the story of how I recorded defensively a conversation with an unscrupulous landlord. And it made me, it reaffirmed for me that these are actually really useful devices, and in places where it's legal and in very, very specific circumstances, it can be immensely beneficial. And the DVR is just kind of like the camcorder. It does one; it's built for one thing, and it will keep going until the end of time. So I upgraded. I got a new one. My previous one was literally more than a decade old, and it's nice. It's from Sony, and it's a good piece of gear. It was not that easy to find this particular DVR. And I mentioned that in the course of Googling my sources in Israel, I mostly found it for sale in stores that were supplying private investigators. They all had variations of the word spy in their domain name. Like, I think there was one spy.org.il, Dr. Spy. And I wasn't clear if they were kind of this weird mixture between websites that felt like gimmick shops and very much not gimmick shops. Like, they were also selling really tiny microphones for thousands of dollars, which I think is probably past the practical joke budget for the vast majority of people. One of the things I found, I was kind of intrigued by the catalog. Some of them were very amusing, and it showed me that there really must be a market for this stuff. I mentioned there was literally quite funnily there was hidden cameras in Jewish skullcaps and mezuzahs. There was also Israeli plugs that had been rigged up for surveillance. So I was kind of amazed to see that this stuff existed, much less that it was being sold on multiple websites. So it speaks to the fact that this is a market. And another major category of things they had, these stores, often, I guess there isn't any shortage in Israel of people who have served in various contexts where they knew develop skills in surveillance or counter-surveillance. And I guess, like in most places, this whole industry of private investigators and the like is frequently a place where these people have a second career. And in that vein, a lot of these places offered or referred to PI firms, which did bug sweeps. And that was interesting to see. So again, much as there's a market for surveillance stuff, there clearly is a market for professional and amateur bug sweeps. And of course, me being me, I didn't just stop at this page. I went on a whole troll on AliExpress. Interestingly, it's one of those things that is definitely not something you want to try to import to Israel. We've talked about the strict control about the RF spectrum here. And the serious ones, the non-toys, rely upon RF transmissions in order to find stuff that is transmitting. And then you've, of course, got ones that are probably complete garbage. So there's those for sale that anyone can buy them if you're in a place with a little bit looser restrictions around the RF spectrum than Israel. You can definitely get for about $100, $200, $300, some kind of an RF spectrum analyzer that'll probably be useful for this, for seeing stuff is transmitting. And then you've got lens finders as well that attempt to find hidden cameras. And finally, at the top end, you've got professional bug sweeps who will bring crazy gear out. So this is kind of an intriguing world. I guess I knew that it existed in, we've talked about the work of surveillance in a lot of podcasts, and that I presume if a foreign leader is staying in even what a foreign country says is a friendly place, and we're not going to bug you. We've mentioned the concept of advanced teams that they nevertheless sweep with really high-end gear. And then these websites kind of conjured the idea of hidden cameras in hotel rooms and Airbnbs. And I have to be honest, call me naive, but I never even thought about that. I never actually, I just assumed that you couldn't operate a hotel. You couldn't operate a major credible hotel and hide cameras. So I'm skeptical, but that was certainly what the marketing was trying to scare people into believing. So Herman and Corden, you do occasionally see it in the news. There was a case here in Israel recently, actually, about a diplomat who I believe was caught operating a hidden camera in a changing room in a Tel Aviv beach. Creepy, very creepy. But besides that kind of stuff, or including that kind of stuff, I guess what was interesting to me, the details of that case, needless to say, were not divulged. But I was wondering whether that was like it was caught in a routine sweep. And I guess that implies that this is going on routinely. So Herman and Corin, for those of us who travel internationally, and do we need to be worried about hidden cameras in our Airbnbs and hotel rooms? Is that really a credible thing? And for these services, the higher end services that do kind of these boutique sweeps, as really serious gear and kind of grisly ex-military people in the photographs, who's actually ordering this kind of a service in real life? Because the government presumably has their own kind of teams for this. But where does the demand come from? Herman and Corin, let's talk about the shady world of hidden cameras, bugs, and counter-surveillance in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. We're hitting a pretty big milestone today. This is episode 365. That is a full year of episodes if we were doing this daily. But since we are weekly, it represents a whole lot of deep dives and rabbit holes we have explored together. I am Corn, and I am joined as always by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. 365 episodes, Corn. That is a lot of talking. I feel like we have covered everything from military probes to the geometry of secrets, but today's prompt brings us right back into the home, or at least the homes we stay in when we travel.
Exactly. Our housemaid Daniel sent us a fascinating audio clip this week. He was actually out looking for a new digital voice recorder, a Sony model to replace one he has had for over a decade. In the process of searching for it here in Israel, he ended up down a rabbit hole of spy shops. We are talking about websites like spy.org.il or Dr. Spy.
I love those names. It is so on the nose. It is like something out of a low-budget detective novel.
It really is. But Daniel noticed something a bit more unsettling than just voice recorders. These shops were selling hidden cameras disguised as everyday objects, things like Jewish skull caps, religious mezuzahs, and even standard Israeli power plugs. It got him thinking about the reality of international travel. Do we actually need to worry about hidden cameras in our Airbnbs and hotels? Is the threat credible, or is it just marketing for these spy shops? And who on earth is paying for professional bug sweeping services?
That is such a great set of questions. It touches on that intersection of high-end technology, basic human privacy, and the creeping feeling of being watched that seems to be a hallmark of life in 2026.
So let's start with the credibility of the threat. Herman, you have been looking into the data on this. When we hear these horror stories about someone finding a camera in a smoke detector in their vacation rental, is that a 1 in a million freak occurrence, or is it a systemic issue?
It is somewhere in the middle, but the trend line is what is really interesting. If you look at the last few years, the accessibility of this technology has plummeted. 10 years ago, if you wanted a pinhole camera that could stream high-definition video over Wi-Fi, you needed a decent budget and some technical know-how. Today, you can go on a site like AliExpress and buy a camera hidden inside a functional USB wall charger for less than $30.
$30? That is remarkably cheap. It basically lowers the barrier to entry to zero.
Exactly. And because the barrier is so low, the number of reported incidents has spiked. There was a major study a couple of years ago where a survey of travelers found that about 11% of people staying in short-term rentals reported finding a hidden camera. Now, we have to take that with a grain of salt because some of those might have been disclosed exterior security cameras, but the fear is definitely there. Airbnb actually changed their global policy in early 2024 to completely ban indoor security cameras in all listings, regardless of whether they were disclosed or not.
I remember that. It was a big move, but it also felt like a bit of an admission that they couldn't effectively police the disclosed ones. People were hiding them in bedrooms and bathrooms and then claiming it was for security.
Right. And that is the core of the problem. There is a gray area between legitimate security and voyeurism or corporate espionage. But to answer Daniel's question about whether it is a credible threat, yes it is. It is not just a paranoid fantasy. We have seen real-world cases, like the one Daniel mentioned in his audio, about a diplomat caught with a camera in a changing room at a Tel Aviv beach. When you have devices that are literally designed to look like a religious object or a power outlet, the average person is never going to notice them.
That is the part that gets me. The power outlet. You and I live in this house in Jerusalem, and we have those exact plugs everywhere. If one of those had a pinhole lens in the little plastic molding, I don't think I would ever see it.
You wouldn't. The lenses are often less than 2 millimeters in diameter. They are hidden behind smoked glass or tucked into the natural shadows of the device. And since they draw power directly from the outlet, they never run out of battery. They can stay there for years, just waiting for someone to walk in front of them.
Okay, so the threat is real in the sense that the technology is available and cheap. But how does it actually work? If someone puts a camera in an Airbnb, how are they getting the footage? Are they coming back to swap out an SD card? Or is this all live streamed?
It depends on the sophistication of the attacker. The cheap ones Daniel saw on AliExpress usually offer 2 modes. One is local storage on a micro SD card. The attacker has to physically retrieve the device or the card, which is risky for them. The second, and more common now, is Wi-Fi streaming. These devices act as a tiny Wi-Fi client. They connect to the house router and stream the data to a cloud server or a mobile app.
Wait, if they are on the house Wi-Fi, couldn't a tech-savvy traveler just see them on the network?
In theory, yes. If you use a network scanning app, you might see a device listed as Shenzhen Electronic Technology or something similar. But a clever person will hide the SSID or use a separate cellular bridge. They can have a tiny 4G or 5G modem hidden in a different part of the room that the camera connects to. That way, it never touches the guest Wi-Fi.
That brings us to the second part of Daniel's question. The bug sweeping services. He saw these websites for private investigators offering professional sweeps. Who is the clientele for that? It seems like an expensive thing to do every time you check into a hotel.
It is definitely not for the average backpacker. The demand for professional technical surveillance countermeasures, or TSCM, comes from 3 main sectors. First, you have corporate executives. If you are the CEO of a major tech company and you are traveling to a competitor city for a high-stakes merger negotiation, your hotel room is a goldmine for corporate espionage. One well-placed microphone could be worth billions of dollars in market capitalization.
I can see that. It is basically the cost of doing business at that level. A $5,000 sweep is a rounding error compared to the value of the trade secrets they are protecting.
Exactly. The second group is government officials and diplomats. As Daniel noted, even in friendly countries, the assumption is that everyone is listening. When a high-level delegation travels, they often send an advance team. That team's job is to literally strip the room down. They check the vents, the wallpaper, the furniture, everything.
And the third group?
This one is a bit more somber. It is people who have a legitimate reason to fear stalking or domestic abuse. High net worth individuals who are going through messy divorces or legal battles often hire these services because they are being targeted by someone with the resources to hire a private investigator to track them.
So, when these professionals show up, what are they actually doing? Is it like in the movies where they have a little wand that beeps when they get close to a wall?
It is a bit more sophisticated than that, though the beeping wand does exist in the form of RF detectors. Radio frequency detectors are the most basic tool. They look for signals being transmitted in the common bands, like 2.4 GHz or 5 GHz for Wi-Fi. But here's the catch. If the camera is just recording to an SD card and not transmitting, an RF detector won't find it.
So how do they find a dumb camera that isn't broadcasting?
That is where the cool tech comes in. They use something called a non-linear junction detector, or NLJD. This is a device that emits a high-frequency radio signal and then listens for the harmonics that bounce back. When that signal hits a semiconductor, which is in every electronic circuit, whether it is turned on or not, it creates a specific kind of reflection.
So it's like a metal detector, but specifically for silicon chips?
Exactly. You could have a camera buried 6 inches deep in a concrete wall with no power and no battery, and a high-end NLJD will still find the junction of the transistor. It is incredible technology, but it requires a lot of skill to use because it will also alert you to the nails in the floor or the rebar in the wall if you aren't careful.
I can see why that costs thousands of dollars. You aren't just paying for the person's time, you are paying for a piece of equipment that probably costs $20,000 or $30,000.
Precisely. And they also use thermal imaging. Electronics generate heat. Even a tiny pinhole camera will be a few degrees warmer than the surrounding drywall. If you look at a wall through a high-resolution thermal camera and see a tiny hotspot behind a picture frame, you've probably found something.
This makes me think about the spy shops Daniel was looking at. He mentioned they were selling these services and this gear. Is that stuff actually effective, or is it mostly just theater for people who want to feel like James Bond?
It is a mix. The shops Daniel saw in Israel are interesting because, as he mentioned, this is a country with a very high density of people with military and intelligence backgrounds. When those guys retire, they often start these private security firms, so the Dr. Spy websites might look a bit kitschy, but the people behind them often know exactly what they are doing. They are selling to other private investigators, not just curious hobbyists.
But what about the average traveler? If I am going to a city I've never been to and staying in an Airbnb, and I don't have $30,000 for a professional sweep, am I just at the mercy of whoever owns the place?
Not necessarily. There are some very effective low-tech ways to protect yourself. The most important one is the flashlight trick.
Oh, I've heard of this. You turn off all the lights and shine a bright light around the room.
Yes, but you have to be methodical. Every camera has a lens, and every lens is made of glass or plastic that reflects light in a very specific way. If you hold a flashlight right next to your eye level and scan the room, you are looking for a tiny, pin-sized reflection that stays consistent as you move. It is the same principle as why a cat's eyes glow in the dark. It is called retroreflection.
Does that work even if the camera is behind smoked glass, like on a clock face?
It does, though it is harder. You have to get the angle just right. There are actually cheap little devices called lens finders that are basically a ring of red LEDs around a viewing hole. You look through the hole and the LEDs flash. If there is a camera lens, it will flash back at you like a bright red dot. You can buy one of those for $20 and they are surprisingly effective.
That seems like a much more reasonable investment for Daniel or any of our listeners. But what about the why? Why would an Airbnb host risk their entire business and potentially prison time to put a camera in a room? Is it just perversion? Or is there a financial angle?
It is usually one of three things. First, and most unfortunately, is voyeurism. There are entire subcultures online where this kind of footage is traded. It is disgusting, but it is a real driver. Second is what I call paranoid hosting. Some hosts are so worried about guests throwing parties or smoking or damaging their property that they convince themselves that a hidden camera is the only way to protect their investment. They don't see themselves as criminals, they see themselves as diligent business owners.
Which is a massive violation of trust and the law.
Absolutely. And the third reason, which we are seeing more of in international business hubs, is data theft. If you can see a guest's laptop screen or watch them type their password into a safe, you have something much more valuable than a video of them sleeping.
That is a great point. If you are sitting on the bed working on your laptop, a camera in the ceiling or a smoke detector has a perfect view of your keyboard.
Precisely. This is why a lot of security experts recommend never using your laptop in a position where the screen or keyboard is visible from a vent or smoke detector. It sounds paranoid until you realize how easy it is to do.
You know, we talked about travel routers back in episode 327. I remember we discussed how they can help secure your data, but I wonder if they also help with this. If you have your own router, you can see every device that connects to it. But if the camera is using its own cellular connection, the router won't see it.
Right. The travel router protects your data stream, but it doesn't protect your physical space. It is two different layers of security. It is like having a bulletproof vest but leaving your front door unlocked.
So, let's look at the legal side for a second. If I find a camera in my room in Jerusalem or London or New York, what actually happens? Is the law caught up to this?
In most Western jurisdictions, it is a serious crime. In the United States, for example, it often falls under video voyeurism laws, which can be felonies. In Israel, the privacy laws are quite strict. If you find a camera in a place where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, like a bedroom or a bathroom, that is a criminal offense.
But what about a hotel lobby or the hallway of an Airbnb?
That is where it gets tricky. Most laws allow for cameras in common areas. But the definition of a common area in a private rental is very different from a hotel. If you are renting an entire house, the living room is generally considered a private area where you have an expectation of privacy. If you are just renting a room, the kitchen might be considered a common area. This ambiguity is exactly why Airbnb just banned them all. It removes the, well, I thought it was a common area excuse.
It is interesting that Daniel mentioned the mezuzahs and the skullcaps. Those are such culturally specific items here in Israel. It adds a layer of psychological discomfort. You are taking something that is supposed to be a symbol of protection or faith, and turning it into a tool of surveillance.
It is the ultimate wolf in sheep's clothing tactic. And it's not just here. In other countries, they hide them in crosses, in Buddhas, in any object that people are conditioned to respect and not touch. It is a very deliberate choice to use objects that a guest would feel uncomfortable moving or inspecting closely.
So, if someone is listening to this and they are about to head out on a trip, what is the Herman Poppleberry checklist for a 5-minute sweep?
Okay, here is the quick version. Step 1, the physical inspection. Look for the big 3 smoke detectors, alarm clocks, and USB wall chargers. Those are the most common hiding spots because they have a clear view of the room and easy access to power. Look for any extra smoke detectors. If there are 2 in a small room, one of them is suspicious.
Step 2.
The flashlight test. Turn off the lights, close the curtains, and use your phone's flashlight. Hold it at eye level and scan the room slowly. Look for that pinprick of light reflecting back at you. Pay special attention to mesh screens on speakers or any small holes in plastic moldings.
Step 3.
Check the Wi-Fi. Download an app like Fing or Wi-Fi Man. Scan the network. If you see a device that you don't recognize, and especially if it has a name like IP camera or CAM502, that is a huge red flag.
And step 4.
This is the simplest one. Cover what you can't verify. If there is an alarm clock you don't need, put it in a drawer. If there is a weird-looking USB charger plugged into the wall, unplug it. If there is a hole in a vent that looks suspicious, put a piece of blue painter's tape over it. It won't stop a professional spy, but it will stop 99% of the cameras Daniel saw in those spy shops.
I love the blue painter's tape idea. It's non-destructive, so the host can't complain that you damaged the property, but it's totally effective.
Exactly. And it sends a message. If a host sees tape over a security camera when they come to clean, they know the guest was aware and looking.
You know, we should probably talk about the demand side of this again. Daniel asked where the demand for these high-end services comes from. We talked about executives and diplomats, but is there a market for counter-surveillance for the average person? Like, are there people who are just chronically paranoid?
Oh, absolutely. There is a whole industry built on targeted individuals. These are people who believe they are being followed or watched by the government or shadowy organizations. It is often a mental health issue, but these spy shops will happily sell them thousands of dollars of equipment that won't actually solve their problem. It is the darker side of the industry. They profit off of people's fears, whether those fears are grounded in reality or not.
That is the tricky part of being an expert in this field, I imagine. You have to distinguish between a legitimate threat and a delusion. If a professional bug sweeper gets a call from someone saying their toaster is talking to them, they have a choice to make.
Most reputable firms will do a preliminary interview. If the client sounds like they are experiencing a mental health crisis, they will often decline the work. But the Dr. Spy type shops, they are often just retail outlets. They'll sell a signal jammer to anyone with a credit card, even though signal jammers are highly illegal in almost every country, including Israel.
Wait, jammers are illegal? I can see why. They could interfere with emergency services.
Exactly. If you turn on a powerful RF jammer to stop a hidden camera, you might also be stopping your neighbor from calling an ambulance. It is a huge public safety risk. That is why the professional sweepers use detectors, not jammers. They find the problem, they don't just blast the airwaves with noise.
This whole conversation makes me realize how much the hidden part of hidden cameras is a moving target. As soon as we learn to look for smoke detectors, they start putting them in the heads of screws or inside the actual drywall.
It is a classic arms race. We saw this in episode 363 when we talked about the anatomy of failure in military probes. When one side develops a detection method, the other side develops a countermeasure. Now, there are cameras that use spread spectrum transmission, which makes them look like background noise to a basic RF detector. They only transmit in tiny bursts or they hop between frequencies.
So even the beeping wand would miss them if they weren't transmitting at that exact second.
Precisely. That is why the professional sweepers will stay in a room for 4 or 5 hours. They are waiting for those bursts. They might even use a stimulator, which is a device that broadcasts a signal designed to wake up any hidden bugs and get them to report back to their home base.
It's like a digital roll call. That is fascinating. It's so much more involved than I ever imagined.
It really is. But I think for Daniel's sake and for our listeners, the takeaway shouldn't be one of total paranoia. It's about informed awareness. The threat is credible, but it's also manageable for the average person. You don't need a $20,000 nonlinear junction detector to feel safe in an Airbnb. You just need a flashlight, a network scanning app, and a bit of common sense.
And maybe a roll of blue painter's tape.
Always the tape. It is the ultimate low-tech solution to a high-tech problem.
You know, looking at the time, we've really covered a lot of ground here. We went from Daniel's search for a Sony voice recorder to the harmonics of semiconductor junctions. This is exactly why I love this show.
It's the rabbit holes, Korn. They are infinite. And I think Daniel's observation about the mezuzahs and skullcaps is such a great reminder that technology doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's always filtered through our culture and our environment. In a different country, they'd be hiding cameras in different objects, but the intent remains the same.
Well, I think that is a perfect place to start wrapping up. We've looked at the credibility of the threat, which is real but rare, and we've explored the world of the professional bug sweepers, who serve the high-stakes worlds of business and diplomacy.
And we've given everyone a few practical tools to take back some of that privacy. It's a weird world out there, but you don't have to be a victim of it.
Absolutely. Before we go, I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has been with us for these 365 episodes. It genuinely means the world to us that you choose to spend your time in these rabbit holes with us. If you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It really does help other curious people find us.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. We love seeing the community grow. And remember, if you have a weird prompt of your own, or if you found something strange in a hotel room and want us to talk about it, you can get in touch with us through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
You can also find our full archive and the RSS feed there. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
And I'm Herman Poppleberry.
Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Stay curious, and maybe keep an eye on your smoke detectors, just in case.
Goodbye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.